Radio.
How we do what we do matters. Practicing the art of proper celebration in parish liturgy. A presentation by Professor Claire Johnson at the Proclaim 2016 conference. Brought to you by Credio and XT3.
Thank you, David. Thank you, everybody. It's really nice to see you all here. I'm a very lucky person. I think I get to work in a field that I happen to be fascinated by, liturgy and sacraments. Not everybody is lucky enough to be able to say that, but I get to do that, which is wonderful. And my work as an academic means that I get to go to and present at conferences in a lot of different places, exotic locations like the United States of America and Germany and Chatswood. Just wonderful lower North Shore air. I have to admit, being from Victoria, I've actually never been to Chatswood. So, there we go, expanding my horizons already. When I'm presenting at a conference, I always look at the conference program, which I didn't happen to bring with me, so I wasn't able to join in the prayer. But I always check when exactly I'm scheduled to present. And I sometimes wonder what I must have done to deserve stellar workshop time, like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. 4 o'clock in the afternoon is quite a dangerous time slot, I think. Bit difficult to present because this late in the day, a lot of people can find themselves feeling a bit like this. 4 p.m. can also be somewhat perilous because it's far enough away from lunch and not quite close enough to dinner that we also possibly risk this, which can result in this. Not a pretty sight. So 4 p.m. And then if we throw in a workshop topic like this, I know I'm going to have to work pretty hard to keep your attention, so we'll do the best we can. With words like art and proper, people can be a bit dubious about the sort of stuff that we're looking at. So I have to work hard to keep you awake. Thankfully, we'll be breaking up into groups at some point, so you can prod the person next to you to keep them awake if they look like they're nodding off, and hopefully I'll be able to provide you with an intellectual aperitif to take you through until dinner time, something like that. Anyway, we're going to start our workshop with a bit of information about what we're talking about when we discuss the art of proper celebration. Then we'll be discussing how to apply those principles in the various ministries. I haven't covered every ministry, but I've got 6 different ministries that we can talk about together as we work out how to apply these principles. So if you happen to be a presider, a lector, a music minister, an extraordinary minister of Holy Communion, an usher or an altar server, then we have a worksheet for you. If you happen to be somebody who is a member of the assembly, you get to choose which of the other groups you can torment with your perspective from the pews. People in the pews always have things to say about those taking ministerial roles. So people from the pews can choose whichever group they'd like to contribute to. Then we'll share our wisdom together and then I'll send you off to dinner. Sound okay? All right, we'll do the best we can. So let's begin by speaking a little bit about liturgy and what it accomplishes when it's celebrated well. We have all celebrated liturgy. They haven't all been celebrated well. So we're really focusing on how are we called to celebrate liturgies well. That siren's going to sound fantastic on the recording. Okay, just wait till it passes. Oh, there we go. So one of the key principles for understanding what we are doing when we gather to celebrate liturgy is that liturgy expresses and nourishes faith. That's one of the central principles of understanding it. In 1959, the then Archbishop of Milan, whose name was Giovanni Cardinal Montini, who later became known as Pope Paul VI, so he's writing before the Second Vatican Council in 1959. Very interesting what he was writing. He published an article that said that the liturgy is like the central artery to which other streams of private and popular prayer lead and from which others flow for the personal spiritual life. Montini emphasized the stupendous formative capacity of liturgy for instructing children and adults, and he called it dogma in the form of prayer. Liturgy is where we pull everything together. I find it one of the most fascinating areas, well, frankly, the most fascinating area of theology, because in order to do liturgy well, you have to understand, in order to teach liturgy well, I mean, you have to understand history, you have to understand scripture, you have to understand systematic theology, every single thing. Ethics comes into it, society comes into it. There are so many different facets to what we're doing and what can influence how well we celebrate that it's endlessly fascinating to study it and to teach it. Celebrating it well is what we're looking at today. Sacrosanctum Concilium, the Constitution on the Sacred Liturgy from Vatican II, encapsulates this notion of liturgy expressing and nourishing faith, stating that liturgy is the outstanding means whereby the faithful may express in their lives and manifest to others the mystery of Christ and the real nature of the true church. That's a huge statement, and liturgy has to bear all of that, which sometimes seems like a lot to ask of it, given that it's a human institution, a human creation done by flawed humans. And yet there it is. The outstanding means whereby we may express in our lives and manifest to others the mystery of Christ and the real nature of the true church. It goes on at number 26, Sacrosanctum Concilium says that liturgical services pertain to the whole body of the church. They manifest it and have effects upon it. Okay, again, big statements in this introductory part of Sacrosanctum Concilium, giving us the whole vision of what liturgy is supposed to do. Finally there, don't be scared of this one. This one comes to us both in the general instruction of the Roman Missal, which came to us in its new form in 2011, but it's also quoting Sacrosanctum Concilium 41. It says, the celebration of the Mass, so we'll focus ourselves mostly on the Eucharist here, celebration of the Mass as the action of Christ and the people of God arrayed hierarchically. There's no getting away from that. That's how it is. We are hierarchically arrayed, so we just got to get used to it. Is the center of the whole Christian life for the church, both universal and local, as well as for each of the faithful individually. Are you intimidated by what liturgy is all about? It can feel a little bit that way. So our beliefs are formed and our faith is nourished, ideally, by what we're doing when we do liturgical celebration well. We also hear that liturgy is a tool of evangelization. So when Pope Francis speaks about evangelization, about preaching the gospel to all, he's speaking about what actually occurs in the liturgy, preaching the gospel. That's where it happens primarily. And ideally, if that gospel is preached magnificently and the homily that unpacks the scriptures in our midst inspires us, living the Christian life in light of what we've celebrated should be easy enough in the difficult world in which we live. What we're doing in liturgy, this high point of our Christian lives, this document on the liturgy from Vatican II calls it the source and the summit of the Christian life, that which feeds us when we come back to celebrate it again and again, that which should be the high point. How many liturgies have you been to that have felt like that? Have you been to one? I hope you have. You can probably think of one that immediately springs to mind that feels like a summit experience. Anyone name one quickly? Today? Fantastic. Yay. Did your spirit good? That's what we like to hear. Tell Archbishop Coleridge, it'll do his spirit good to hear that. One of the chief aims of liturgy celebrated well is that the gospel message is in fact conveyed in such a way that it can truly be heard, understood, and lived out in the lives of the Catholic faithful. But liturgy as a tool of evangelization can actually be blunted if we don't know how to celebrate well, or we don't care whether we celebrate well. And unfortunately, that's the case in some places. People are not putting enough care factor into the way that things are being done. Hence my rant and my workshop. So, you know, we'll get on with it. So we don't want to blunt this tool of evangelization. The liturgy is supposed to be at the center of what it is to be church. And this is a notion that a lot of contemporary Christians need to rediscover or actually discover for the first time in some places. So new evangelization is not about conveying a new message. The message hasn't changed. John Paul II taught us this. But the means, the medium, the method for conveying the message needs to be working for our people today. And I think we've got a lot of work to do in this area, seems to me. Okay, so we're talking about the art of proper celebration. Now, this wonderful phrase comes to us from Pope Benedict XVI. There he is. I like that picture of him. This is an interesting idea. It's a relatively new concept. In fact, he only came up with it. Because it's in Latin, people think it's really old. It's not. He came up with it. He coined this phrase in 2007. So it's really a new phrase. And he put it into its first official appearance is actually in his 2007 post-synodal apostolic exhortation on the Eucharist as source and summit of the Church's life and mission. So this is called Sacramentum Caritatis, the Sacrament of Charity. So he mentions in Latin the Ars Celebrandi. Sounds great, doesn't it? Don't be scared, it just means art of proper celebration. So whenever I use the Latin, just translate it in your head, art of proper celebration. He talks about this particularly in regard to his discussion of beauty. Now, this is something that often we don't hear talked about terribly much in liturgy, in terms of liturgy. Have you experienced a moment of beauty in liturgy? Some of you have. How many of those moments have to do with music? Yeah. And this is kind of a primary way that he speaks about the appearance of beauty within liturgy. Oftentimes for me, they can be exquisite moments of, you know, that spine-jingling moment when the choir reaches the apex of the piece. I'm a musician, so, you know, these things mean more to me perhaps than to some. But he's talking about the appearance of beauty in liturgy. And he's saying it's not about aestheticism. It's not about being, you know, very snooty in our approach of things that are, you know, very, a very narrow range of things that are beautiful. Beauty can take all sorts of different forms. And he says, rather, we need to think of beauty as an aspect of God. So capital B, beauty, is one of the cognates for God. One of the ways in which we can speak about God is capital B, beauty. And he says that, of course, we understand this primarily in reference to Christ, that he, the human face of God, reveals who God really is, this God of love. So a little bit from Pope Benedict XVI there, he writes, "Beauty then is not mere decoration, but rather an essential element of the liturgical action, since it is an attribute of God himself and his revelation. We learn about who God is through these moments of beauty, and it is possible to have them in the liturgy. These considerations," he says, "should make us realize the care which is needed if the liturgical action is to reflect its innate splendor." So he is of the vision and the understanding that doing the liturgy properly, as it is designed to be done, provides these moments of beauty for us. They're not just beautiful, but they are actually potentially moments of revelation of God to us within the liturgical context. It's a marvelous vision. So the Ars Celebrandi, there it is. What's the translation? There it is, beautiful. Perfect. So what he would say is that liturgy celebrated properly is an act of beauty. He says the primary way, and this is important, the primary way to foster the participation of the people of God in the sacred rite is the proper celebration of that rite itself. So we're always talking about how do we get people to participate properly in the ritual? Well, he's saying it's not that hard. Do the rite properly. And this will speak in and of itself. Because this is not something that we've created. This is something that has been handed down to us over centuries and millennia. We step into a river that's already going past us. We're not creating this thing new. It is something that we are privileged to enact in our time, in our place. And it's an act of beauty. So liturgy ideally is what sustains the faith, is what sustains the faith life of the believer. Sacrosanctum Concilium 14 again says this. In the restoration and promotion of the sacred liturgy, remember that Sacrosanctum Concilium is essentially the, you know, the mission statement that then has to be enacted. We're still doing that bit. It's taken us a while. We're still getting there. But it says, when we're thinking about restoring and promoting the liturgy, this full and active participation by all the people is the aim to be considered before all else. We've got to remember that. For, and this is the reason, it is the primary and indispensable source from which the faithful are to derive the true Christian spirit. So if the faithful are to derive the true Christian spirit, we need to do everything in our power to celebrate this liturgy that gives them that true Christian spirit well. You convinced? Cool. Let's break this down into its component bits. So we need to ask the question, if we're talking about the art of proper celebration, what do we mean by art? Do we mean this? No, we don't. Let's think about defining art a little bit. Generally, if we talk about art, we can talk about a diverse range of human activities, creating visual, auditory, or performing artifacts, expressing the author's imaginative or technical skill, intended to be appreciated for their beauty or emotional power. General definition of art. Does any of that ring true in terms of liturgy? Possibly. Another little aspect of it, art is the quality, production, expression, or realm according to aesthetic principles of what is beautiful, appealing, or of more than ordinary significance. Boy, that one pertains to liturgy. More than ordinary significance. We're doing something that is not ordinary, so we shouldn't be treating it as ordinary. The art of proper celebration deals with the way that we approach the creation of liturgical celebrations. We need to use our imaginations. We need to have technical skill to do this well. We need to engage with expression, which is something that I think Archbishop Coleridge does extremely well. He draws you in when he presides, very much in communication. He's an expert at that. According to liturgical principles, what is beautiful, appealing, or more than ordinary significance? So this engaging with something that is more than ordinary significance is about engaging with God, who is beauty. Yeah. All right. What do we mean by proper? This is something that takes a little thinking about. Do we mean this? A proper way of dressing. Do we mean this? A proper way of lifting a heavy box. Do we mean this? Proper way of decanting a bottle of wine, or the proper way of setting a table. So what does the church mean by proper? Well, here are a few little bits from the general instruction of the Roman Missal. This is the how-to guide for using the Roman Missal. If you've never dived into it, don't be scared. It's very, very interesting, and it really, really helps you if you're trying to check out how we should be doing things when we celebrate the Mass. And I wouldn't read it from start to finish because it'll bore you stupid. But, you know, go in there and have a look for what you need to find. If you are an altar server, go in there and read the altar server bits. If you are a lector, go in there and read the lector bits. It's got something of great importance to anybody who is celebrating the liturgy. Number 5 says, in the celebration of the Eucharist, each one should carry out solely but totally that which pertains to him or her in virtue of the place of each within the people of God. So this one pertains to not doubling up, meaning that if you are the lector, that's all you do. You don't also take up the role of Eucharistic minister and usher and collector and bulletin hander outer and, you know, spread it around a bit. Okay, only that which you are called to do in this particular celebration. One person, one ministry. Does? Yep. If it's just you as presider and one server, then they can take on multiple roles, but that's unusual. You've got to be careful to avoid the slave imagery that implies. It does depend on but in a Sunday celebration with probably more than 5 people, I think you can probably share it around a bit. Number 17 says, the celebration of the Mass should be so ordered that the sacred ministers and the faithful taking part in it, according to the state proper to each, again that word proper, may draw from it more abundantly the fruits of Christ's sacrifice. So doing it properly helps us to draw forth the fruits of Christ's sacrifice into our lives. Again, it's another way of saying some of those principles we looked at earlier. 20 says, since the celebration of the Eucharist is carried out by means of perceptible signs by which the faith is nourished, strengthened, and expressed, the greatest care is to be taken that those forms and elements proposed by the Church are chosen and arranged in light of the circumstances of people and places to foster active and full participation and respond to the spiritual needs of the faithful. So we've got to be careful to make sure that whatever signs we are utilising within the liturgy do their job. And I'm a fan of lots and lots and lots of baptismal water. People should get extremely wet if they're going to be baptized. People should be slathered with oil if they're going to be confirmed or ordained. You know, this minimalistic, let's do as little as we possibly can stuff is destroying people's faith. If you plunge that person into the water and leave them there for 3 seconds so they can't breathe, then they will understand what Paul was talking about in Romans 6 when he talks about dying. and rising. Yes. Ideally, Charles, that's what will happen. We minimalize our rituals and our ritual actions to such a degree that it's really difficult for people to actually see what's going on or appreciate what's going on. If we have a teeny tiny candle instead of a really big Paschal candle at the Easter Vigil, it makes a huge difference. Huge difference. All right. So proper in a liturgical sense means appropriate to one's role, so the functions proper to each person present. It means working according to the church's rules, instructions, guidelines, laws. It does mean enacting the rubrics, the red writing, doing what it says, not more, not less. And in terms of the presider and anybody else who's charged with preparing the liturgy, Sacrosanctum Concilium 22.3 says that no one, not even if he is a priest, may change, omit, or add anything to the liturgy on his own or her own. A lot of people kind of forget that one. All sorts of things creep in that shouldn't be there. So we've got to be very careful to police it and make sure that we're not overstepping the boundaries and not leaving important things out. Or changing things. So, but there are so many adaptations possible within the parameters outlined by the liturgical books. The thing is that you've got to know the liturgical books. There are over 10 Eucharistic prayers available to us. Did you know that? Some of you did. Fantastic. Do we use them? No. It frustrates the heck out of me when I stumble across a presider who will only use one Eucharistic prayer, forgetting that the Universal Church has approved over 10. So let's make use of all of the options that are there. You know, think a little bit more about what might be appropriate for this particular need or occasion. Use the adaptations that are possible. Have you experienced the sprinkling rite using the blessed salt? That's really fun. Liturgy can be great fun when we use all of the possibilities that are in there. And terribly engaging, and people love it when you use the blessed salt and you go through the whole ritual. We also have to be informed by the church's documents, so especially the Roman Missal, the lectionary, and the universal norms for the liturgical year, for example. That's just a number to start with. Okay, what do we mean by celebration? Well, let's go back to the Latin, celebrare, honouring of a day or season by appropriate festivities. This is your secular definition of celebration. Liturgy does that. Numerous attendance, especially at a festival. Liturgy does that. Performance of a religious ceremony, especially the Eucharist. Again, liturgy does that. So we have the enactment of our beliefs in a public official worship context happening here. And if it is done well, we are able to appreciate the various modes of Christ's presence within the liturgy. Is there a difference between reading and proclamation? Yeah, how many times do we hear the reading proclaimed? Very, very seldom. Unless you're very lucky. And it doesn't mean performance. But there's a difference between proclamation with faith and understanding and belief behind it and someone just standing up without any preparation and stumbling through and barely making it, you know, comprehensible. Well, that's not okay. So who celebrates the liturgy? Catechism of the Catholic Church talks about the whole community, the body of Christ. I won't go through the whole thing there. But it's all of us celebrate the liturgy. So the Ars Celebrandi, as Pope Benedict was talking about it, he had in the back of his mind primarily priests and presiders at liturgy. But all of us, as the Catechism says, celebrate the liturgy. So all of us have responsibility for how it is celebrated well. Now back to Benedict, because he gives us the principles we're going to be working with in a second here. What does he say the art of proper celebration involves? Faithful adherence to the liturgical norms. Everybody's rolling their eyes and going, oh my God. Do it as we're supposed to be doing it and see what happens. Fostering a sense of the sacred and outward signs that cultivate this sense. So the harmony of the rite, liturgical vestments furnishing sacred space, all working together instead of clashing violently with each other. We've all sort of had, you know, that horrific colour experience where the vestments clash with the paramount on the ambo, which clash with the cloth on the alt, you know. For the visually attuned, that can be just so distracting. My mum is one of these folks who just can't stand it if the colours are not working together. It's just too much. She can't think about anything else. It's like me with a cantor who sings out of tune. I just can't cope. He also says that it is about making known the current liturgical texts and norms as found in the general instruction of the Roman Missal and the lectionary. And he says it is about attentiveness to the various kinds of language that the liturgy employs. Words and music, gestures and silence, movement, the liturgical colours of the vestments, all those sorts of things. Paying attention and taking care and doing the very best we can is all part of this art of proper celebration. He also says that art itself needs to have our attention. So attentiveness to every work of art placed at the service of the celebration. Unity of the furnishings of the sanctuary, painting and sculpture. Well, there's a big fat can of worms for your parish to negotiate, especially when you've been gifted with a beautiful piece of really, really ugly art by some prominent family. And what does the parish do if it completely clashes with everything else that you've got in the space? The foyer is an option. The parish hall is an option. But if it doesn't work in harmony with everything else in the space, I think Pope Benedict would probably advise that, you know, you think of other options. Okay. One more little thing here, or a couple of little things, and then we'll work on our workshops. Workshop, part of the workshop, that makes sense. The US Catholic Bishops Conference put out a document in 1972, which sounds like a very long time ago, called Music and Catholic Worship, but they had this wonderful statement at the start of it, which I often refer to, which says, faith grows when it is expressed in celebration. Good celebrations foster and nourish faith. Poor celebrations may weaken or destroy it. Do you agree? I'm seeing some nods. It's beautifully succinct. It gets right to the point and it doesn't pull its punch. So we have this possibility of evangelization. Benedict XVI said, respect for the established liturgical norms expresses love and fidelity for the faith of the church. So when we do things properly, it is an expression of love for the whole of the Catholic faith. For the treasure of grace that she preserves and transmits, the beauty of celebrations, far more than innovations and subjective adjustments, makes evangelization a lasting and effective work. So he absolutely links proper celebration with evangelization. If we took more care, maybe the message would get through a bit more. I like to talk about performance practice. As a musician, this is something that the musicians in the room will know about. It's about understanding how things are supposed to be performed. So if you've studied classical music, for example, there are received traditions with regard to how a particular style of music is to be performed, and you work very hard to make sure that your melismas, little flowery bits within the music, are precisely within the style of the time of the music when it was written. And this is an art. So liturgical performance practice is like that too. We need to be absolutely true to what it is that we're being given the chance to enact. Understanding liturgical performance practice well does respect the nature of the liturgy or the aspect of the liturgy that you're responsible for engaging with if you've got a ministerial role and the official directives for how it is to be done. Liturgical performance practice also works intelligently within the constraints and possibilities of local circumstances. Now, like the comment about how many people we've actually got at a liturgy, of course you've got to be sensible. You can't be ridiculous about, you know, trying to enact something if you simply don't have enough personnel to do it. So within the reality of your local circumstances, what's the absolute best you can do? If you don't have an organ, what's the best you can do? Don't turn on a CD. Have unaccompanied singing, live music, absolutely in preference for anything else. Liturgical performance practice is also very much not about the minister as a performer. It's about the role that they're enacting. So as a cantor who has, you know, intoned many a psalm, and also as somebody who's done music theatre and operatic performances and choral performances, I know the difference that my attitude has to take on when I am a vessel for the word of God to proceed through me as a cantor of the psalm. So the psalm, of course, is part of the liturgy of the word. And I, as a vessel for the word of God coming through me, mustn't get in the way of that. It's the same with every other ministry. Don't get in the way of the role that you're performing. And good liturgical performance practice is, in fact, the art of proper celebration, the Ars Celebrandi. Okay. just going to give you a little bit from Musicum Sacrum because it talks about skill and spirit. This is one of the things that I want to I want you to focus on as we break into groups in a second. Organists and other musicians, it says, this is a document from the Vatican on sacred music from 1967, organists and other musicians should not only possess the skill to play properly the instrument entrusted to them, they should also enter in and be thoroughly aware of the spirit of the liturgy, so that even when playing extempore, they will enrich the sacred celebration according to the true nature of each of its parts and encourage the participation of the faithful. Skill and spirit are both essential if you're going to do your role in the liturgy properly. Let me just flip through the other sides here because we're not going to have time to go through them. I was going to talk to you all about my... You have no idea how much I've cut from this already. Here we go. Here's a little list of what is needed to minister well, in my humble opinion. At least it's a starting list. You can have a little bit of a look there. Competence would be number one, I think. You actually have to be competent. No, actually, number one would be baptized. You cannot serve in a ministerial role in the Roman Catholic liturgy unless you are initiated into the community that you are serving. Okay, so nobody who is not a member of the community can be called to one of these roles. Then you need to be competent, which means you need training. You need to have ability. Not everybody has the ability to sing in tune. They have other abilities that can be they can be called upon to utilize. Training and preparation are involved, and that's ongoing. You should be refreshing those skills every once in a while. Love of God in the church community, respect for the liturgy, a desire to serve rather than to dominate or, you know, have the spotlight on me for a moment. Humility, reliability and commitment. Spirit of relational service, not of self-centered pride, and an invitation. That's always good. If you're looking for ministers, invite somebody. Invite them to get trained. And then commission them, not for the term of their natural life, but for maybe a couple of years. And then if they want to keep going, okay, you recommission them. If they don't, okay, fair enough. Somebody else gets a turn. But sometimes you get people entrenched in positions in parishes and they take over and it's ownership and therefore it must be done just the way they do it. And that's kind of dangerous too. So if we can, you know, enter into this with it, with some of these spiritual approaches, it can be very helpful. Okay, I am going to flip us through quickly here. Oh, I'm going to talk about that, but no time. And you are models of faith when you are liturgical ministers, and you mustn't be a distraction. So if you're getting in the way of the role because you're incompetent, faithful but incompetent, you know, that's a problem. It's like somebody, you know, you can see the picture there, somebody turning on their mobile phone in the middle of the movie, and suddenly you're taken out of the movie and into the theatre again. When somebody is incompetent in performing their ministry within the liturgy, that's what they're doing. They're taking you out of prayer and putting the focus onto them as opposed to onto God, which is where the focus should be. So we need to be fostering excellence, and we need to be checking out whether we are focusing too much on other things. Is good enough okay, or is it really excellent? I don't think that good enough is good enough. And I think we need to be thinking about or remembering the fact that we are in the presence of God, and we need to be thinking about what is God owed in this celebration. David tells me that we're out of time, but I wanted just to leave you with a little bit of Pope Francis to conclude, because he's cool and wise. He says in Evangelii Gaudium, "Today, as the church seeks to experience a profound missionary renewal, there is a kind of preaching which falls to each of us as a daily responsibility. It has to do with bringing the gospel to the people we meet, whether they be our neighbours or complete strangers. This is the informal preaching which takes place in the middle of a conversation, something along the lines of what a missionary does when visiting a home. Being a disciple means being constantly ready to bring the love of Jesus to others. And this can happen unexpectedly and in any place, on the street, in a city square, during work, on a journey, and I would add, in and through the proper celebration of the liturgy." Thank you so much, everybody.
That was Professor Claire Johnson with How We Do What We Do Matters, Practicing the Art of Proper Celebration in Parish Liturgy. This presentation was part of the Proclaim 2016 conference on the theme, On a Mission of Mercy, Evangelizing Parishes, which was hosted by Broken Bay Diocese, Australia. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.